Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 109 with Hani Wyszanski. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Hani, we explore a number of interesting topics like the story of starting Discovered Consulting, the correlation between parents and leadership, the block and tackle method, and themes learned from launching the Early Childhood Leadership Conference. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into it, I would like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by CSC Consulting Group, whose venture is a social enterprise, and their vision is to catalyze sustainable change in our society, one organization at a time. Learn more at www.csconsultinggroup.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. I know the owner and founder of School Spirit Vending. He is a personal friend, and he brings hassle-free fundraising to your school. But even better, Matt has written a top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017. He's given it away completely free. Get it at schoolzonepodcast.com. That's the top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Hey, well, hey there, Better Leaders. I am so excited to connect with a new friend today, Hani Wyszanski, an early childhood strategist and leadership coach. She works with early childhood directors to help them build a school of excellence. Schools that want to make a bigger impact, creating a collaborative culture, parent relationships, and teachers as leaders. Hani believes that no matter the stage of your school, the size of your staff and children, or how big your budget, schools are powered by the people. As a mom of three little kids, ages 2, 5, and 7, she loves to observe, do research, and learn, and make the time to read 2 books a week on leadership, school cultures, mindset, and early childhood. Hani, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Danny. It's so great to be here. I'm really excited about this.
I see that you're a reader. I'm going to try to get you to join my mastermind later. But
awesome. All right. We'll talk about that.
All kidding aside, tell me the story of starting Discover Ed Consulting.
Sure. So Discover Ed Consulting started as its like actual name. August will be 2 years. And it really started a little bit before then. And the kernel, like that little seed that wanted me to start this, was that I am obsessed with learning. I have a real hunger to learn, to research, to find whatever it is about what I'm fascinated about. And as a teacher, I used to go to all kinds of workshops and conferences, and I used to watch webinars, and just, I would constantly be going to any opportunity there was to expand my professional development as a teacher. And the thing that really, really bothered me when I used to go to these things was that it was very philosophical, it was very theoretical. There was very few actual action steps or strategies that I could truly implement the very next day in my classroom. And it was more about me sitting down and sifting through pages and pages of notes and trying to put together some kind of like, okay, so based on all these speakers and all the stuff that they said, here's like something that I can actually implement in my classroom tomorrow. And it was from that pain that I decided to create Discover Ed Consulting, which is all about strategy and all about this implementation of getting into the classroom, getting into your school and implementing, just going out there and making, like, even if the strategy doesn't work, go out there and make the mistake and come back and tweak it, but take action.
Yeah, I love that idea. Yeah. Especially what you ended there, you know.
Yeah.
Making it safe so that you can take risks, and even if it doesn't go as planned, is what I'm hearing, making adjustments. A lot of people call it pivoting, right?
Yes.
So
yeah,
that you start back on the path, you know, towards the goal you have established. So how would you describe your leadership style?
Hani, and how did you develop this style?
Yeah, so for me, leadership is a lot about, you know, I think people toy back and forth with this, what is definition of leadership, or what's that style of leadership? And people, you know, talk a lot about it being of service. And I really do believe it is a little bit of service. But more than that, my leadership style is really about the leader embedding this capacity for greatness in the people that they're serving, and really creating this environment where the people can become great. So, you know, Simon Sinek talks a lot about the correlation between leadership and parenting. And as a parent, you know, I have three little kids, and I love that comparison, because as a parent, we all want the best for our kids. Like, we all want them to be more successful than us. We want them to make more money than us. We want them to lead better lives than us. We just want to give them everything. Like, we want to give them the best life possible. And even if that means that they're having something that we didn't have, it doesn't matter. Like, if they're our kids, we're so glad that they're having that. And I really feel like as a leader, you really want to have that same mindset where you're constantly looking for opportunities to implant this moment of greatness into your people.
Yeah. In terms of embedding the capacity of greatness in your people, it says something about the heart that you have as a leader. And I guess, you know, you're talking about that correlation of parents and leadership to really care for your staff almost like your own kids. Maybe?
Yeah.
I mean, if you took that approach, right?
Yeah, I actually want to share a story that I heard. And
this is
exactly what it feels like. So, it's a story that I read, and I also heard it. So Bob Chapman wrote a book. It's called Everybody Matters. And Bob Chapman is the CEO of a company called Barry Waymiller. And he writes in his book how he was once at a wedding, and he was sitting there in the pews at the wedding. And it's customary that the dad, when he walks his daughter down the aisle, and he gives her away to his future son-in-law. And it's funny because I always get choked up when I say this story, because it really, even though my kids are really young, I still kind of envision this, you know, this moment. So,
sure.
So anyways, he's sitting there in the pews, and he's recounting this experience as he's watching it, that the dad is literally giving his daughter away to somebody else. And his hope and his prayer is that this person takes care of her and loves her and cherishes her and respects her and gives her everything more than he would ever give to her. And he writes in his book, Bob, he says, you know, I'm the CEO of this company. Every single person that comes to work every single day is somebody's son and daughter. Somebody's son and daughter steps into my building every single day, and it's my job to take care of them. And I think that when I think about that story and I think about that definition, and if that is a story that plays in your mind every day as a leader, think about how your actions, your words, your body language, how everything would be so different if that was constantly in the forefront of your mind.
It's a great point. You know, I think it's really about connecting with our people and being more humane. You know,
yes.
Somebody that I really like to follow, Seth Godin.
Oh, yeah.
Constantly toying with the tension between, you know, are we cogs in a machine, or are we an artist, something special to be treasured?
Sure.
And that's what I hear you saying right now.
Yeah.
But honey, how do we keep that at the forefront, right?
As a leader,
things get busy.
Yeah.
And we forget that this person is a son or a daughter that somebody cherishes, right?
Yes.
Like your kids.
How
do we keep that at the forefront of our minds?
Yeah, and I first of all, I think that's a great question that doesn't have a very simple answer or solution. I think it's more about, just like with anything that we want to have at the forefront of our mind, or with anything that's truly important to us, it's something that we constantly become a student of, like, we're studying that, right? So we're students of studying this concept of, I'm trying to put in like a sentence or some kind of catchphrase, but it's not coming to me. So I'm just going to say it as it is. So
yeah,
I know, right? So it's having that in your mind about, okay, when the teacher walks into your office and she's sharing, you know, this giant blunder that she did, or something that she said to a parent that was like, oh my gosh, that should not have happened. And at the forefront of your mind is like, okay, this is someone's daughter. How would I want someone to talk to my child if they were to make a mistake? You know? And I think it really depends on whatever works for you. You know, for me, I have some quotes that I put next to my computer screen and on my fridge that just have these little reminders for me constantly, because I'm human. I forget. Yeah, I would love never to raise my voice on my kids and always remain calm and speak in a positive and respectful voice all the time. But I'm human, and that, you know, life happens in that way. But I feel like if we do set our environment up to reflect what we truly want, it's a lot easier. And I feel like the not the excuses, but like the phrases of like, but we're busy, but we're this, but we're that, it's simply that you haven't created yet that environment that's truly feeding your bigger goals of what you want your school to be about. Hmm.
Do you mind sharing? I'm wondering if you're looking at your computer right now, what is a quote that you often refer back to?
Oh gosh, I have so many. So I have a bunch of Simon Sinek quotes that I love. You know, I'm part of his, he has a daily email that goes out. So one of the, just trying to get the one that I have on my dashboard over here. Okay. So this one I love. Yeah. So this one, I have it saved in a little like note drive. So one of the things he says is, when we help ourselves, we find moments of happiness. When we help others, we find lasting fulfillment. And I think about this quote a lot because it reminds me also of one of my big mistakes as a leader. I was in a classroom and I was coming in as a coach. I was working with this school over a long period of time. And the director had told me that this particular teacher was really struggling with a specific routine in her classroom. And she asked me to come inside and help her. And the thing that she was struggling with was the cleanup routine. And to me, that was something, me as a person separate from this teacher, was really easy for me. Like I never struggled with cleanup routine. Right. And I taught toddlers for 7 years, these little 2-year-old kids. And I never had an issue getting them to clean up because I always had these great systems and songs and I had this thing down pat. Anyways, so I stepped into the classroom and the first thing I did was really just sit on the side and just kind of take in like the dynamic and the teacher's personality and what was going on and how the kids were responding to her. And I was watching her kind of struggle to get 5 kids. All she had was 5 kids in the classroom that day. And she couldn't get them to just do anything. Like it was really chaotic, just even with 5 kids. And I was telling myself, I'm like, don't mix in, honey, like just sit back. Like you're not supposed to jump in and save her. Like you're really just like, watch this. And you know, afterwards, but I couldn't, I just couldn't hold myself back. Mm. And I jumped in and I totally took over. And it was crazy because there was this fleeting moment of like, oh, I was this hero because it took me like less than 60 seconds and all the kids were kind of moving around the classroom and, you know, cleaning up or whatever it was. But then I had this huge pit in my stomach and I was like, what did I do? Why did I do that? And then looking at the teacher's face said it all. She had this face of like complete defeat, complete failure, complete like I'm helpless. And I was like, oh my gosh, I totally messed this up. So I ended up talking to her after and I ended up apologizing and you know, we figured it out and I really helped her tap in herself and what her greatest strength was to help her figure out the strategy that would really work for her. So afterwards, it ended up being a great moment for the teacher. But I think about this a lot because as a leader, it's so easy to jump in and just do things and help your teachers and help your people. Because a lot of times you do know the answer. A lot of times you do have a really simple fix that could take less than 30 seconds and it's done. But it's when we help others that person gets their time to grow and that we can actually feel the sense of fulfillment that we're truly helping the other person and not just becoming the hero of the story.
I love how you weaved in, you know, a really hard mistake and what you learned from that with the Simon Sinek quote, because it shows that focus, right? When you help others, you find lasting fulfillment. And it is tough because, listen, you know, as a leader, man, we have so much on our minds. You know, what we need to get done throughout the day, that task list continues to grow. And so here's the solution. Just do it. Like you said, 30 seconds. It's all it would take.
Yeah.
But you cut the legs off your people when you do that. They don't.
Yeah, I love that expression.
You know, they don't take ownership of what's happening. It's not a learning and teachable moment. Yeah. And that's what you really have to guard against. So thank you so much for sharing that story. And
You're welcome.
I'm curious too, like the apology, was that quick to happen? Did it take a day, a week, a month? Like
that's really interesting actually. So I came home that day. You know what? I actually didn't say sorry that day to her. I didn't. I said goodbye, have a good day. It was great seeing you, whatever it was.
Dropped the bike, right? On the way out of the classroom.
Yeah. And I came home. And I kind of battled with it. And I was like, should I apologize? How should I apologize? What should I say? What should I not say? And then I was kind of getting into my head of like, oh, is apologizing going to be weak? Is she going to think that I can't help her anymore if I apologize? Like I was kind of going through all these different moments in my head. And I think it ended up taking me more than 3 days. It was definitely by the end of the week, but it was longer than a day or two. It did take me a while because I kept pushing it off. I really was procrastinating about what would be the best way to do that. And what I ended up doing was I ended up recording this voice memo apologizing because I really wanted her to hear my voice. I felt that an email was a very... I think email is great, but I think that I wanted her to hear the tone of my voice. I really wanted her to hear that I really was sorry about what happened and that I didn't want it to happen again. You know, so I sent an email and the attachment was the voice memo. And I asked her to reach out to me and, you know, if she wanted to talk about ways to, you know, move further with it. And what's amazing about really being authentically vulnerable and apologizing from a place of authenticity, she responded that night and she was like, oh my gosh, no problem. Like, it was amazing how you just got the kids so quickly put, like, you know, together. I really would love to learn how to do that. Like, you know, let me know when we could chat.
Wow, that's so interesting. And I think, you know, what I'm attributing it to is taking that extra time and thoughtfulness into being able to record your voice and send that off.
Yeah.
Because, man, email can be just such a pain and people can interpret it in way too many ways. And that's why I love Voxer when I give teachers feedback because they can hear the intonations, what I got excited about.
Sure.
Really appreciated, you know, about the lesson.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really nice touch.
Yeah, I believe very strongly in video recordings, different things like that. I think it's so important for people to hear your voice. Your voice, it's a powerful form of communication. You know, so yeah.
Podcast, honey.
Yes. There we go. We're going back to that, Danny.
Yeah. So tell me, our leaders are really interested in like what systems and little rituals people have, right, to be successful. And, you know, I have definitely fathers and mothers that listen to this podcast, of course. And you talked about how you love your kids. And when you were off on the circuit speaking at ed conferences, it was hard being away.
Yeah.
But bringing it back home, when you're with them, you know, how do you have, what does a great morning look like for you so that you connect, I guess, with your kids and still set yourself up for a productive day?
Sure. So I actually have an entire kind of peak performance system that I work with. I have a bunch of different mentors. One of my mentors is a person named Todd Herman. Todd is a peak performance coach. He works with pro and Olympic athletes on the mental game. And he has a program I don't know what to actually call it, but it's called the 90 Day Year. And what it is essentially is really just learning how to create a system where you're working in a model that truly serves your day, your goals, where you are in your life, your family values, like just everything about what you're really trying to accomplish every single day. And so I really work this system with a lot of the strategies that come into it. But going back to what I do in the morning is my mornings are truly My mornings are really mindful. My husband leaves the house at about 6:40 in the morning. So I'm really alone with my three kids, getting them ready for the day. And so I'm very specific about what I do, when I do it, and how it's done. So my kids have their own routines in their bedrooms. They have a whole chart with a very specific, I created it with them. So when they wake up in the morning, they know what they need to get done on their own. So I'm not running around micromanaging, you know, telling them what to do, this, that, and the other. They have their system. They know what they need to do. When I'm working with my toddler, I have a two-year-old. She has a very specific way that she needs to be in the morning. She needs a lot of cuddling in the morning, a lot of one-on-one time, a lot of time just to sit on my lap. And I want to make sure that I could give her that time without her feeling like I'm trying to rush. And so I make sure to get out of bed early enough that I can give her that time. And so that, I'm going to tangent for a second, going back to being a leader in a school. Every single teacher needs something very different from you as the leader, just like every child needs something different from you as the parent. And so she really needs that time in the morning. And I know that when I'm feeling even slightly rushed, she clings on even harder. And she like, I can't even put her down. So I'm very mindful about that. When it comes to like systems is, you know, we eat breakfast together. I usually tell the kids some stories in the morning, you know, then I'm zipping bags, kind of taking the kids to the bus, whatever it is, kids get to school about 9. And then I have that time for myself. I don't take any client calls or do any meetings before 10 o'clock in the morning. And so I like to give myself a solid hour for me. And that's when I do journaling. I do prayer in the morning and I eat breakfast. And those three things are a huge piece for me to start off my day in a place before I'm going to do service, before I'm going to be giving to people. I need to make sure I'm putting stuff inside myself. So physically, emotionally, and spiritually.
I appreciate how you, I guess, have boundaries around taking care of yourself first.
Yes.
So that you can then serve others. So yes. It's so important. With the journaling, is that something, stream of consciousness, gratitude, or some type of topical? What's
sure.
The approach there?
Yeah, so it's actually something fairly recent that I started, so I'm still kind of toying with it, but I enjoy the process because a lot of it is about gratitude. So just really being mindful about what I'm grateful for. And also, the journaling is also about really focusing on what I want to have and writing it in the present tense. So, you know, I'm just trying to think about something recently that I was writing about.
Am I hearing you say like almost aspirational goals, but written in the present?
Yeah, but writing them in the present. So like even something as simple like, you know, I spoke at a conference in San Diego in the beginning of May. And I was really nervous about getting up on the stage there. It was, you know, it was a big group of directors and I was really excited about the opportunity, but it was also just tremendous amount of pressure. And I was like, I really wanted to perform really well. I really wanted to serve. I really wanted to give incredible content. And when I was journaling about it, I was writing about it in the present tense. You know, I gave an incredible speech. All of the people there, you know, I just wrote it in this present tense of what happened already.
Yeah, I think that's a good, not necessarily like hack, but you know, just that's a trick, right? And
for me, it's been working really nicely. Again, some people could look at it and be like, "Oh, that's like old voodoo, whatever," and that's fine. Yeah. So, and I have lots of other just really great. You know, if I'm talking about a hack for systems, one of my favorites. I have two favorites. One is Plan Tomorrow Today. So I never go to sleep before I have my first 2 hours of the morning mapped out down to the minute. So if I'm working from 10 to 12 the night before, I need to have mapped out exactly what I'm doing in those 2 hours because I don't want to wake up the next morning and start having to exercise my decision-making power to decide what I'm going to focus on. Because then the day's going to hit me in the face with cold water and my day is going to end up becoming about responding to everyone else's emergencies. And I don't want to do that. So the night before I sit down and I really map out, like, what am I doing from 10 to 10:30? What am I doing from 10:30? Like, what am I doing in those 2 hours, which are the critical moments of the day for me? It's when I'm hyper-focused. So I think as a leader, when you're listening to this, really think about before you leave your office, plan your tomorrow today. Like, look at your calendar. What has to happen tomorrow? What's the most important thing that has to happen tomorrow? Put it on the first thing on your calendar and actually have it open on your desk. So on Fridays, I write thank you cards. It's a part of my system and my routine and what I have. And so I have 30 minutes on Friday that I write thank you cards. So Thursdays on my desk, there is thank you cards, stamps, envelopes, and a pen. It's already there. The battleground is ready for me. So when I sit down, I don't need to think. Right. It's there. And I think that people give themselves too much credit for having decision-making power when we're actually human and we don't have a lot of it. And so really setting yourself up in advance is a very powerful strategy.
Yeah, so good. And in the intentionality of planning tomorrow, today, I think is what you said. I call the ideal week. It's something that I teach in a webinar. This is in August, so by now I've run it a couple times, but I have this secret system, right? Isn't it a title? A secret system, but it's true. Like, how to accomplish more in what I say 3 months than most do in a year. And I have a similar 90-day way of packaging it, because that's what I've learned through reading books and other materials. Yeah. And then I implemented it in my own life because I struggled with it. And that works. So it's really neat to hear how other people do some similar things.
Sure.
Guess what, listeners? This stuff works. So cool thing about the webinar, I gave it all away for free. And you know, I know you have a gift, and we'll get to that at the end of the show.
Yeah, I wanted to share one more good hack and strategy as far as routines and systems go.
Please,
so
this is
one of Todd's, and it's awesome, and I share it with everyone. It's the block and tackle method. And what it is essentially is that if there's one thing that school leaders struggle with a lot, I find, is that they wish they could get into the classrooms more. And their kind of complaint against it is that I don't have time, or I can't get in, or there's so many other things I have to do. And so one of the things, or like, I don't have time to respond to emails. So I stay in school till 2 a.m. and that's when I respond to all the emails, because during the day, because during the day I'm so busy. You know, my door is always open. Someone's always coming in. I can never concentrate. And so what I really recommend directors is to really pick that time of day that you're going to focus, and that you're blocking off that portion to answer emails. So if you're deciding from 11 to 11:30 a.m., every single day you're going to be responding to emails and your door gets closed. And I think that a lot of leaders have a difficult time with closing their door, because they're like, oh, but I worked so hard to create this open door policy and this warm environment. And I'm like, having an environment where your door is always open and you're always available is actually not healthy at all. You need to have some alone time. I mean, parents close their bedroom door. Sometimes mommy's not available. Sometimes daddy's just not available right now. Yeah. Does that mean that they don't love them? Does that mean that this isn't a warm home? Absolutely not. And so you need to close your door, and you need to actually communicate that with your team. When the door is closed, why it's closed, you know, why are you closing the door? And also helping them understand what an emergency really means. Like, teachers knock on the door like, oh, it's an emergency. And it's like, oh, we're out of stockroom paper. And it's like, that's not an emergency. So I think really clearly articulating what an emergency means, why they should be able to, you know, knock on your door if it's closed, actually helps your teachers. It creates an environment of respect that sometimes we're not available, and that's okay.
Again, that goes back to the boundaries. So where you took care of yourself in the mornings and make sure you're good so you can serve other people. It's the same sort of thing. But, you know, I learned the hard way myself, is it's really important how you communicate that to your
people. Yeah.
Because if you leave it open to interpretation, they might say that you're the unavailable leader. And so you could definitely message it so that it's really crystal clear. Listen, I do have an open door. I care about you. I want to meet. But at this specific time, I need to do whatever type of work, or just get caught up on emails. Just leaders, make sure that you talk about with your staff, because it's important for you to tell the story. Because if you don't tell the story, somebody else tells a story. And that might not be the story you want to be told.
Yes, I love that. I love the way you said that, Danny. Yeah.
But unfortunately, I don't love that I experienced it. So I only know it because I lived it. So, you know, what are you going to do?
Today's podcast is brought to you by CSC Consulting Group, whose current portfolio includes individual schools, nonprofit organizations, small and large districts, and urban school systems. Their home city is in Chicago, but their work can be done anywhere in the nation, and they're actively looking for clients around the world. Find out more at www.cscconsultinggroup.com. Conferences, piles of flyers, getting stuck in endless email lists and never-ending calls. There's an easier way to sort through and identify the best school fundraisers. School Spirit Vending proudly presents the top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017. It's a guide of the top fundraising companies hand-picked from the best podcast. As an added bonus, this guide lists 5 resource companies that would add tremendous value to your community, school, and students. The best part is that School Spirit Vending is giving the guide away completely free. Are you ready to simplify the search? Download the free guide at schoolzonepodcast.com.
So I know you work with schools and directors, and I'm just curious, maybe over, let's say, the past 6 months, what are you most particularly proud of accomplishing? I'm wondering if it's the summit or if it's something else.
So, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. For me, I really think it's the summit, this early childhood online conference that I hosted. And I think the reason I'm so proud of it was number one, every decision that I had to make to get the conference up there was something that pushed me completely out of my comfort zone. I was so scared for almost every decision that I had to make, it reaching out to the speakers, interviewing them, researching to find what kind of questions, all of the tech that was involved in it, following up with the people that were affiliates for the program. I mean, there was so much that was involved in getting the conference rolling, and every decision, because it was a new one, I've never done it before, really, really scared me. But I constantly told myself, I'm like, I kind of started associating that like stomach feeling of fear with something magnificent on the other side. And so every time I felt that pit, I was like, oh, okay, something's great about to happen. And I kind of like powered through with that. And so I really created this mental image of like the stomach fear with something amazing. So I think that was one of the reasons why I'm really proud of it, is because I truly consistently pushed myself out of my comfort zone. Another big piece is that I feel so humbled that I was able to interview such incredible, iconic leaders and really ask them targeted questions about early childhood, specifically from a leadership perspective.
What were some of the, I don't know if you've thought about this, maybe you have, were there any themes that you identified across the different speakers that you had at the conference?
Yeah, so the conference was divided into 4 different parts. There was leadership, marketing and branding, progressive education, and parent partnerships. And there was themes across each of those, particular sections. And if I'm talking about the leadership section, this podcast is about leadership. Each one of the speakers in the leadership section really brought across a very powerful message of what's going on in your school is really about first you holding up that mirror to yourself, and that it's not about, well, they need to take more initiative and they need to do this and they need to be more motivated and they need it, or how can I help them? And everything was about they and them and everything. And the people that I interviewed, it was all about, look at yourself. How can you be more empathetic? How can you be more of a risk taker? How can you step out of your comfort zone more? How can you be quiet to make room for your people to think? And I think that theme is truly inspired me that I need to be a better listener. Like if I'm going to choose something that I, can really become better at every single day, and something that I consciously choose to become better at is listen more, like not interrupt, listen with an intent of listening, not with the intent of, well, here's my great answer. And that was the theme across the leadership speakers. Like Simon said something, when your next staff meeting, here's a challenge, be the last person to speak.
Yeah.
And
love it.
2 days ago, I met with a director who I didn't know. She knew me from the conference. And she was like, oh my gosh, honey, I have to tell you what I did in my school. And she said, after Simon's session, the next staff meeting, I had someone else start the meeting and I was the last to speak. And she said, what I said at the end was, I said, did anyone notice that I didn't say anything during this meeting? And she said, all the teachers unanimously said, yes, we noticed. And so that was a big moment for her as a leader to realize, wow, I really talk a lot. I take up a lot of space in these meetings.
Right, right, right.
If people were so aware of the fact that I was quiet.
It's great because there's reflecting on that, the space you physically, emotionally, mentally, you know, occupy. And that's going all the way back to the worst leadership mistake, right? Where you stepped in.
Yep.
Like, how's your organization growing if you are in the way, you know?
Yeah.
Something I've always tried to do is refuse to be the bottleneck or like the cap to the ceiling of what we can accomplish.
Yeah.
And so I really rigorously reflect on how do I remove myself and empower people to do the work, to get the experience. And the thing is, like, often people have better ideas than me.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Like, I don't want to be the leader because like I have the best ideas. I want to be the leader because I create a great environment where people can thrive.
Yep.
You know? So that's just my approach. But that's what I hear you saying through the story you're sharing about what you learned, especially from Simon there.
Yeah.
Love it. The conference, where can people learn more about it and potentially, you know, glean some of the wisdom that the speakers, you know, shared with you?
So they can go to ecleadershipconference.com. And that is where they can see all the information about the different sections of the conference, who the lineup of speakers were. We had 22 speakers, some of them just truly, truly world-class. And really, depending on where you're struggling in your school right now, there was someone there that addressed that pain point. And so I think that's one of the reasons why I'm so proud of that.
Awesome. And listeners, by now you should know that all these great resources, Hani's website, the EC Leadership Conference, that will all be linked up for you in the show notes for sure. Hani, concerning school leadership, have you changed your mind about anything in the past few years?
Oh God, I changed my mind about lots of things. I'm saying, like, as I get more and more in the trenches and as I get more and more in actually on the field of play, you know, it's constantly shifting in that way. But if there's one thing I'm going to pick, it's going to be, I really always thought that the leader, who's essentially the boss and the person on top, knows all the answers, has to know everything, and never question them. And I think that my view now of leadership is the complete opposite of that. That the leader doesn't need to know everything, doesn't need to have all the answers, doesn't need to tell people what to do. The power of truly being vulnerable and saying, I don't know, or saying, how can we figure this out together, can take the team so much further than you can ever imagine.
Yeah. And listeners, take heed to that advice from Hani, is that, listen, you need to have the courage to step up and say, you don't know, you don't have the answer, and I need help. And then in addition to that, I think it's important to ask great questions. And that's, to me, also the antidote for wanting to have all the answers.
Yes.
So, you know, you ask the right questions, you're going to get at the root of what's causing what obstacle, problem, challenge, or why a system, or why the history's been the way it's been. Ask those questions. It's super, super important. Hani, what's one book every principal should read right now and why?
You're only letting me pick one book?
Just one. I mean, some guys, they'll rattle off 10, you know? So whatever you want to do. But
oh,
yeah,
God.
Yeah.
There's too many. Okay, so the number one book they have to read is Turn the Ship Around by David Marquet. And the reason I say this, because I've actually read Marquet's book. I'm on my third round. Gosh, if I'm going to give a summary of Marquet's book, is that We read a lot. There are lots of books on leadership out there. There are lots of books about people that talk about leadership. And I think what's so different about David is that David was a captain. He lived in this warship. And he truly turned this ship around from 135 crew members. That was the lowest performing ship, the lowest morale. And he turned it into the highest ranking ship that won medals. I mean, Stephen Covey went to go visit his ship. And what's incredible is the journey and the story that he talks about how to truly create an organization like that. And so if you're someone that's listening to this and you're truly on this journey, not like, oh yeah, leadership is really important and I should read a leadership. No. Like, take out this book if you really want to dig deep and you're ready to shift yourself. Not, oh, I need to read this book so I can motivate my teachers. That's not what this book is about. This book is about you taking the book and saying, look at myself, what do I need to start doing better? Or what habits do I need to eradicate so I could create a better space for my people?
What's interesting, I've had that book recommended in the mastermind I'm a member of, not the one I facilitate, because my friend Tom Schwab, you know, was in the Navy.
Yeah.
And it's on my reading list, and I'm curious, maybe I should read that in the mastermind with the members. But you know, the theme of, well, there's a few themes, but something I really appreciate that you've really illustrated for us is the importance of change starts with you, the leader.
Yeah.
And often we look at, what do I need to do with my people? You know, what do they need to learn? And obviously we can't forget them, and we got to empower, we got to provide professional development opportunities, and really personalize to what we do with our folks. But it starts with you. So mm-hmm. when you're looking at where people need to grow, listener, where are you growing? You know, obviously by listening to the podcast, you're doing that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good start. But where are you growing, digging deep, like getting challenged, being held accountable, that kind of stuff? It starts with you. So Hani, thank you for really illustrating that point.
Thanks. Yeah.
So you got the kids, which I know obviously makes you busy. Wonderful husband, and
thank God.
And what you're doing, you know, with Discovered Consulting. But when you have free time, if you have free time, what do you do for fun?
Oh, I do have free time, because the way that I schedule myself is that one of the things in my schedule is fun, is to spend time with things that are meaningful to me. So nice. A lot of times people ask me that, like, you know, when do you sleep or when do you have time to do things? And I'm like, I don't really respond to that, because the question is more rhetorical. Like, they don't really want to know my system. Uh-huh. They're just like, oh, how do you do it all kind of thing, right? Yeah. But for the people that really do want to know, I tell them, I'm like, the way that I schedule my day is, I think I've become better skilled at saying no respectfully, kindly, you know, nicely to opportunities or to people or to whatever it is that aren't aligned with where I'm really heading and what I want my day to really be about. So what I do for fun is, my husband and I actually have some really fun hobbies. We like kayaking. So we live in Brooklyn, and in Prospect Park, they actually have kayaks. So we love doing that. It's a fun thing that we enjoy together. And with my kids, I love taking them to the park. I love taking them to zoos. My kids love sensory activities. So I'm always making Play-Doh or all kinds of stuff that totally wreck up the house, and thank God for cleaning help and stuff like that. But yeah, I really just love getting messy with them. Like, you know, put paint on their feet and let them walk around on paper around the floor and just really just go crazy. Like, I love that. I really do.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Hani, you made it. I'm so proud of you. This is the end of the interview. And the question is, you're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget or resources, your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
You know, I love this question, David, and I looked at it for a really long time, and I was really, really thinking about it. And I'm going to share, I don't know if I have the top three. I don't know if the answer is, you know, so well crafted or whatever it is, but I think the messy version is what people like to hear also. So for me, the first thing would really be to look for people that have a hunger for learning and for people that don't just pay lip service to, yeah, I really want to work in a progressive school, or yes, I really want this job, or yes, I really want to make an impact, or whatever it is. It's really looking into their eyes, really listening to the quality of the answers that they're sharing with you. Where is their thirst? Where is their drive and that hunger to grow? Because I know I'm friends with a lot of people, and the people that are constantly climbing and growing are the people that have an insatiable hunger to learn. So I think that would be a huge piece for me. Another thing would be, you know, building this dream team would be people that could ask really good questions. And, you know, directors always are asking me, like, what are some really great interview questions to ask when I'm interviewing new people? And I always tell them, like, you know, when you send out, like, the confirmation that, like, oh, your interview is at this and this time, tell the teacher to come with some good questions to ask you. And look at the quality of her questions. Like, what kinds of questions is she asking you? Because if you're going to the values of your school and like the core values or, you know, your mission statement, a lot of schools have a similar mission statement in that they want a place where children are inquisitive, where children are, you know, want to grow, have this insatiable hunger to learn and grow. Well, the teacher can't create that if she doesn't know how to ask really good questions to the kids. And so at the interview, when you're looking for your dream team, don't look for people that have the answers to all of your really good questions. Look at the people that come with really great questions also, and especially the ones that you can't answer. I think it's really humbling. So that was the other piece. And my final piece is when I'm creating this environment and I'm, you know, don't have this budget constraint or whatever it is, I think it's about really meeting with each of the people on the team and asking each individual person, what do they want to grow as professionals? Are they fascinated by technology in the educational space? Is that something that they want to pursue in their classrooms this year? Are they fascinated by parent relationships and partnerships? Is that something that they want to dive into and, you know, and really take a deep dive in? As a teacher, when I was in Preschool of the Arts, where I taught for 5 years, every single year I had a different focus that I really worked to master. And so two of the years I studied parent relationships and partnership in relation to technology and its how it was evolving. And I tested so many different ways to engage parents and to bring them into the classroom. And I was really successful in that. You know, parents were in my classroom at least once a week. There was a parent in my classroom doing something, participating in something that was going on. And this is once a week, not once a month, once a week. And we're talking really high-powered parents in the heart of, you know, Manhattan. I had parents who worked on the trade floor, and parents had really high-powered jobs. But it was the messaging, and it was the way that I communicated with the parents that truly made them want to come. And so I think as a leader, a lot of times we struggle with things like, oh, I need to motivate my team. I need to inspire them. I needed this. And it's about, are you actually communicating to your people? Is what you're doing aligned with what you really want? Or is it just like, yeah, I really want everyone to get along. I'm not really sure what that means or how that looks or whatever it is. So kind of went on a little ramble here, but to tighten it up is, who are the people that have a hunger for learning? Who are the people that have truly great questions, are on this quest for innovation, and asking your people how they want to grow personally so that they're not only furthering your goals or your endeavors to make your school look amazing, but that each teacher is shining and having their moment.
Hani, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any steps you'd like the listeners to take today, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, thanks so much. So I actually prepared a free gift, which is the Director's Toolkit Bundle.
Yay!
You can download that in the show notes, as Danny said. And that has just some really great resources. Another great place to really just find out more about what I'm doing in schools is to check out the ecleadershipconference.com and really check out who the speakers are, what they have to share, what your quest is, like what you really want to grow in as a leader, as a school leader. So,
and again, listeners, you know, all that, all those goodies are linked up for you in the show notes. I was on the Leadership Conference webpage, and it is stacked with A-plus players and people that you do want to learn from. So I encourage you highly to click on that link, check it out, and definitely grab yourself that free resource, the Director's Toolkit Bundle. It is packed with value. I think Hani said that there's like six different tools in there. So, I mean, she's really over-delivering, and just want you to check that out. So please click through to those things. Better leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life's 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast is brought to you by Daniel and Hani. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Hani in the search bar. The show notes will pop up. You get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources and the best ways to connect. Hani, thank you so much for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you, Danny. Thank you so much. And thank you to everyone that listened. And I hope that you all go forth and take action on one strategy or one story that inspired you, and that will create the ripple effect.
Better leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show, and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.